Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. Throughout 2016, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine has been celebrating its 75th anniversary with a variety of special issues, an exhibition, and a symposium at Columbia University whose recording is available in this podcast series. This month's podcast selection is particularly appropriate for our anniversary year, during which we have celebrated many successful authors who got their start in our pages. Harry Kemmelman, creator of the famous Rabbi David Small Mysteries, is one such writer. The Rabbi Small books were bestsellers, and Friday the Rabbi Slept Late was adapted for television. Harry Kemmelman's stellar career began in the 1940s when he entered our second annual short story contest. Along with two other authors, he was awarded a special prize for first published story, and the tale appeared in the April 1947 issue of EQMM. Reading Harry Kemmelman's story for this podcast is Steve Steinbach, whose first work of fiction also appeared in EQMM in 2010. Steve is also a noted scholar of the mystery, and he has been EQMM's regular book reviewer for the past several years. Here he is reading The 9 Mile Walk by Harry Kemmelman.
I had made an ass of myself in a speech I had given at the Good Government Association dinner, and Nicky Wilt had cornered me at breakfast at the Blue Moon, where we both ate occasionally, for the pleasure of rubbing it in. I had made the mistake of departing from my prepared speech to criticize a statement my predecessor in the office of district attorney had made to the press. I had drawn a number of inferences from his statement and had thus left myself open to a rebuttal, which he had promptly made and which had the effect of making me appear intellectually dishonest. I was new to this political game, having but a few months before left the law school faculty to become the Reform Party candidate for district attorney. I said as much in extenuation, but Nicholas Welt, who could never drop his pedagogical manner, he was Snowden Professor of English Language and Literature, replied in much the same tone that he would dismiss a request from a sophomore for an extension on a term paper. That's no excuse. Although he's only 2 or 3 years older than I, in his late 40s, he always treats me like a schoolmaster hectoring a stupid pupil. And I, perhaps because he looks so much older with his white hair and lined gnome-like face, suffer it. They were perfectly logical inferences, I pleaded. My dear boy, he purred, although human intercourse is well-nigh impossible without inference, most inferences are usually wrong. The percentage of error is particularly high in the legal profession, where the intention is not to discover what the speaker wishes to convey, but rather what he wishes to conceal. I picked up my check and eased out from behind the table. I suppose you're referring to the cross-examination of witnesses in court. Well, there's always opposing counsel who will object if the inference is illogical. Who said anything about logic? He retorted. An inference can be logical and still not be true. He followed me down the aisle to the cashier's booth. I paid my check and waited impatiently while he searched in an old-fashioned change purse, fishing out coins one by one and placing them on the counter beside the check, only to discover that the total was insufficient. He slid them back into his purse and with a tiny sigh extracted a bill from another compartment of the purse and handed it to the cashier. "Give me any sentence of 10 or 12 words," he said, "and I'll build you a logical chain of inference that you never dreamed of when you framed the sentence." Other customers were coming in, and since the space in front of the cashier's booth was small, I decided to wait outside until Nicky completed his transaction with the cashier. I remember being mildly amused at the thought that he probably thought I was still at his elbow and was going right ahead with his discourse. When he joined me on the sidewalk, I said, "A 9 mile walk is no joke, especially in the rain." "No, I wouldn't think it would be," he agreed absently. Then he stopped in his stride and looked at me sharply. "What the devil are you talking about?" "It's a sentence, and it has 11 words, I insisted. And I repeated the sentence, ticking off the words on my fingers. "What about it?" You said that given a sentence of 10 or 12 words...
Oh, yes, he looked at me suspiciously.
Where did you get it?
It just popped into my head. So come on now, build your inferences.
You're serious about this? He asked, his little blue eyes glittering with amusement. You really want me to?
It was just like him to issue a challenge and then to appear amused when I accepted it, and it made me angry.
Put up or shut up, I said.
All right, he said mildly. No need to get huffy. I'll play. Let me see. How did that sentence go? A 9-mile walk is no joke, especially in the rain. Not much to go on there.
It's more than 10 words, I rejoined.
Very well.
His voice became crisp as he mentally squared off the problem.
First inference, the speaker is aggrieved.
I'll grant that, I said, although it hardly seems to be an inference. It's really implicit in the statement. He nodded impatiently.
Next inference, the rain was unforeseen. Otherwise, he would have said, a 9-mile walk in the rain is no joke, instead of using the especially phrase as an afterthought.
I'll allow that, I thought, although it's pretty obvious.
First inferences should be obvious, Nikki said tartly.
I let it go at that. He seemed to be floundering, and I didn't want to rub it in.
Next inference, the speaker is not an athlete or an outdoorsman.
You'll have to explain that one, I said.
It's the especially phrase again, he said. The speaker does not say that a 9-mile walk in the rain is no joke, but merely the walk, just the distance, mind you, is no joke. Now, 9 miles is not such a terribly long distance. You walk more than half that in 18 holes of golf. And golf is an old man's game, he added slyly. I played golf.
Well, that would be all right under ordinary circumstances, I said. But there are other possibilities. The speaker might be a soldier in the jungle, in which case 9 miles would be a pretty good hike, rain or no rain.
Yes, and Nikki was sarcastic. And then the speaker might be one-legged. For that matter, the speaker might be a graduate student writing a PhD on humor and started by listing all the things that were not funny.
See here, I'll have to make a couple of assumptions before I continue.
How do you mean? I asked suspiciously.
Remember, I'm taking this sentence in vacuo, as it were. And I don't know who said it or what occasion it was. Normally a sentence belongs in the framework of a situation.
I see. What assumptions do you want to make?
For one thing, I want to assume that the intention was not frivolous, that the speaker is referring to a walk that was actually taken, and that the purpose of the walk is not to win a bet or something of that sort.
That seems reasonable enough.
And I also want to assume that the locale of the walk is here.
You mean here in Fairfield?
Not necessarily. I mean in this general section of the country.
Fair enough.
Then, if you grant those assumptions, you'll have to accept my last inference that the speaker is no athlete or outdoorsman.
Well, all right. Go on.
Then my next inference is that the walk was taken very late at night or very early in the morning, say between midnight and 5 or 6 in the morning.
How do you figure that? I asked.
Consider the distance. 9 miles. We're in a fairly well-populated section. Take any road and you'll find a community of some sort in less than 9 miles. Hadley is 5 miles away. Hadley Falls is 7.5. Gorton is 11, and East Gorton is only 8 miles if you strike East Gorton before you come to Gorton. There's a local train service along Gorton Road and bus service along the others. All the highways are pretty well traveled. Would anyone have to walk 9 miles in the rain unless it were late at night when no buses or trains were running, and when the few automobiles that were out would hesitate to pick up a stranger on the highway?
You might not have wanted to be seen, I suggested.
Nikki smiled pityingly.
You think he would be less noticeable trudging along the highway than he would be riding in a public conveyance where everyone is usually absorbed in his newspaper?
Well, I won't press the point, I said brusquely.
Then try this one. He was walking towards a town rather than away from one.
I nodded.
It is more likely, I suppose. If he were in a town, he could probably arrange for some sort of transportation. Is that the basis for your inference?
Partly that, said Nicky. But there's also an inference to be drawn from the distance. Remember, it's a 9-mile walk, and 9 is one of the exact numbers.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
That exasperated schoolteacher look appeared on Nicky's face again.
Suppose you say I took a 10-mile walk or a 100-mile drive. I would assume that you actually walked anywhere from 8 to a dozen miles, or that you rode between 90 and 110 miles. In other words, you might have walked exactly 10 miles, or just as likely, you might have walked approximately 10 miles. But when you speak of walking 9 miles, I have a right to assume that you have named an exact figure.
Now, we are far more likely to know the distance of a city from a given point than we are to know the distance of a given point from a city. That is, ask anyone in the city how far out Farmer Brown lives, and if he knows him, he will be able to say 3 or 4 miles. But ask Farmer Brown how far he lives from the city, and he will tell you 3 6/10 miles, measured on my speedometer many a time.
It's weak, Nicky, I said.
But in conjunction with your own suggestion that he could have arranged transportation if he had been in a city...
Yes, that would do it, I said. I'll pass. Any more?
I've just begun to hit my stride, he boasted. My next inference is that he was going to a definite destination, and that he had to be there at a particular time. It was not a case of going to get help because his car broke down, or his wife was going to have a baby, or somebody was trying to break into his house.
Oh, come on now, I said. The car breaking down is really the most likely situation. He could have known the exact distance from having checked the mileage just as he was leaving the town.
Nicky shook his head.
Rather than walk 9 miles in the rain, he would have curled up in the back seat and gone to sleep, or at least stayed in his car and tried to flag another motorist. Remember, it's 9 miles. What would be the least it would take for him to hike it?
4 hours, I offered.
He nodded.
Certainly no less, considering the rain.
We've agreed that it happened very late at night or very early in the morning. Suppose he had his breakdown at 1 o'clock in the morning. It would be 5 o'clock before he would arrive. That's daybreak. You begin to see a lot of cars on the road. The buses start just a little later. In fact, the first buses hit Fairfield around 5:30. Besides, if he were going for help, he would not have to go all the way into town, only as far as the nearest telephone. No, he had a definite appointment. And it was in a town, and it was for some time before 5:30.
Then why couldn't he have got there earlier and waited? I asked.
He could have taken the last bus, arrived around 1 o'clock, and waited until his appointment. He walks 9 miles in the rain instead, and you said he was no athlete.
We arrived at the municipal building where my office is. Normally, any arguments begun at the Blue Moon ended at the entrance to the municipal building. But I was interested in Nicky's demonstration, and I suggested that he come up for a few minutes. When we were seated, I said, "How about it, Nicky? Why couldn't he have arrived early and waited?"
"He could have," Nicky retorted. "But since he did not, we must assume that he was either detained until after the last bus left, or that he had to wait where he was for a signal of some sort, perhaps a telephone call."
"Then, according to you, he had an appointment sometime between midnight and 5:30?
"We can draw much finer than that. Remember, it takes him 4 hours to walk the distance. The last bus stops at 12:30 a.m. If he doesn't take that, but starts at the same time, he won't arrive at his destination until 4:30. On the other hand, if he takes the first bus in the morning, he will arrive around 5:30. That would mean his appointment was for some time between 4:30 and 5:30.
"You mean that if his appointment were earlier than 4:30, he would have taken the last night bus, and if it was later than 5:30, he would have taken the first morning bus?"
"Precisely. And another thing, if he were waiting for a signal or a phone call, it must have come not much later than 1 o'clock.
"Yeah, I see that," I said.
"If his appointment is around 5 o'clock and it takes him 4 hours to walk the distance, he'd have to start around 1.
He nodded, silent and thoughtful.
For some queer reason I could not explain, I did not feel like interrupting his thoughts. On the wall was a large map of the country, and I walked over to it and began to study it.
You're right, Nikki, I remarked over my shoulder. There's no place as far as 9 miles away from Fairfield that doesn't hit another town first. Fairfield is right in the middle of a bunch of smaller towns. He joined me at the map. It doesn't have to be Fairfield, you know, he said quietly. It was probably one of the outlying towns he had to reach. Try Hadley. Why Hadley? What would anyone want in Hadley at 5 o'clock in the morning? The Washington Flyer stops there to take on water about that time, he said quietly. That's right, too, I said. I've heard that train many a night when I couldn't sleep. I'd hear it pulling in, and a minute or two later I'd hear the clock on the Methodist church banging out 5. I went back to my desk for a timetable. The Flyer leaves Washington at 12:47 a.m. and gets into Boston at 8 a.m. Nikki was still at the map, measuring distances with a pencil. Exactly 9 miles from Hadley is Old Sumter Inn, he announced. Old Sumter Inn, I echoed. But that upsets the whole theory. You can arrange for transportation there as easily as you can in town. He shook his head. The cars are kept in an enclosure, and you have to get an attendant to check you through the gate. An attendant would remember anyone taking out his car at a strange hour. It's a pretty conservative place. He could have waited in his room until he got a call from Washington about someone on the flyer, maybe the number of the car and the berth. Then he could just slip out of the hotel and walk to Hadley. I stared at him, hypnotized. It wouldn't be difficult to slip aboard while the train is taking on water. And then, if he knew the car number and the berth... Nikki, I said portentously, as the reform district attorney who campaigned on an economy program, I'm going to waste the taxpayers' money and call Boston long distance. It's ridiculous, it's insane, but I'm going to do it. His little blue eyes glittered, and he moistened his lips with the tip of his tongue. Go ahead, he said hoarsely. I replaced the telephone in its cradle. Nikki, I said, this is probably the most remarkable coincidence in the history of criminal investigation. A man was found murdered in his berth on last night's 12:47 from Washington. He'd been dead for about 3 hours, which would make it exactly right for Hadley. I thought it was something like that, said Nikki. But you're wrong about it being a coincidence. It can't be. Where did you get that sentence? It was just a sentence. It simply popped into my head. It couldn't have. It's not the sort of sentence that pops into one's head. If you had taught composition as long as I have, you'd know that when you ask someone for a sentence of 10 words or so, you get an ordinary statement such as, I like milk, with other words made up by a modifying clause like, because it's good for my health. The sentence you offered related to a particular situation. But I tell you, I talked to no one this morning, and I was alone with you at the Blue Moon. You weren't with me all the time I paid the check, he said sharply. Did you meet someone while you were waiting on the sidewalk for me to come out of the Blue Moon? I shook my head. I was outside for less than a minute before you joined me. You see, a couple of men came in while you were digging out your change, and one of them bumped into me. As I thought I'd wait, did you ever see them before? Who? The 2 men who came in, he said, the note of exasperation creeping into his voice again. Why, no, they weren't anyone I knew. Were they talking? I guess so. Yes, they were. Quite absorbed in their conversation, as a matter of fact. Otherwise, they would have noticed me, and I would not have been bumped. Not many strangers come into the Blue Moon, he remarked. Do you think it was they? I asked eagerly. I think I'd know them again if I saw them. Nikki's eyes narrowed. It's possible. There had to be 2. One to trail the victim in Washington and ascertain his berth number. The other to wait here and do the job. The Washington man would be likely to come down here afterwards. If there were theft as well as murder, it would be to divide the spoils. If it was just murder, he would probably have to come down and pay off his confederate. I reached for the telephone. We've been gone less than a half an hour, Nikki went on. They were just coming in, and service is slow at the Blue Moon. The one who walked all the way to Hadley must certainly be hungry, and the other drove all night from Washington. Call me immediately if you make an arrest, I said into the phone, and hung up. Neither of us spoke a word while we waited. We paced the floor, avoiding each other, almost as though we had done something we were ashamed of. The telephone rang at last. I picked it up and listened. Then I said, okay, and turned to Nikki. One of them tried to escape through the kitchen, but Wynne had someone stationed in the back, and they got him. That would seem to prove it, said Nikki, with a frosty little smile. I nodded agreement. He glanced at his watch. Gracious, he exclaimed. I wanted to make an early start on my work this morning, and here I've already wasted all this time talking with you. I let him get to the door. Oh, Nicky, I called. What was it you set out to prove? That a chain of inferences could be logical and still not be true, he said. Oh. What are you laughing at? He asked snappishly. And then he laughed too.
The 9 Mile Walk is copyright 1967 by Harry Kemelman. Rights to produce this reading were licensed via Macintosh and Otis, Inc. Music for the podcast is by Dilbert and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. The Harry Kemelman novels are now available in ebook editions published by Open Road and can be obtained from all major ebook retailers. Open Road currently has 3 of the Harry Kemelman ebooks on sale for $1.99 in the United States. This promotion will run on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Kobo, Google Play, and Apple's iBooks. The sale begins today, Thursday, December 1st, and runs through Tuesday, December 6th. The featured titles are The 9 Mile Walk, a collection of 8 Nicky Welt stories, Friday the Rabbi Slept Late, the Edgar-winning Book 1 in the Rabbi Small series, and Saturday the Rabbi Went Hungry, Book 2 in the Rabbi Small series. Fans won't want to miss this special offer. Readers can also subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.